Next Step 491, November 2nd, 2017. Observing versus celebrating. The Protestant Reformation at 500. Our Catholicos is in town. Horror, tragedy, terror in New York. And the celebrations of the World Series. Let's put it all together. That's what I'm about. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, the spiritual, the physical, and everything in between. I'm inviting you to connect it with us right now as we take the next step.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Since 2008, these next steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, as well as for those searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, as well as for the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
It hit me as I was reading this article about the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. And this bishop from the Evangelical Lutheran Church, she says, "We are not celebrating the 500th anniversary of Reformation. We are observing it." And that's the beginning point of today's show, celebrating versus observing. A lot of times when we get these nice round numbers or we have something historic happening, we tend to use the word celebration, when actually all it is an observance. Celebration means there's something to celebrate, right? Anyway, that's our starting point because so much is going on right now and I want to share so much with you. As I left you off last week, I told you we were getting ready to welcome His Holiness Karekin II, the Supreme Patriarch, the Catholicos of all Armenians, into our diocese. And it was only a few hours later that we attended the Hrashapar service and welcomed him in. Over the weekend, we had an incredible divine liturgy, which there's a link on today's show notes. Make sure you watch it. This is one of those meditative divine liturgies, okay? In other words, it's just, you don't want to sit through something like this every week, but once in a while, you need to do something like this. It was just so beautiful. And it was an opportunity to really close your eyes and experience something bigger than yourself. So anyway, I'll share some insight on that. But also Saturday, we had an opportunity to be with His Holiness and the youth. The questions that he was asked, I'm going to share some answers with you coming up in a few moments. But let's get to some of the events that have happened this week globally. And it's kind of interesting because it falls right into what we've been talking about, observing as opposed to celebrating. This week began with this horrific tragedy again, once again, in New York. Once again, a tragic event taking place this time in New York. And we see that in the name of God, in the name of Allah, we have some guy just killing randomly, killing people. And not only that, at the end of it, saying that he's proud to be able to do it. You gotta wonder what kind of God that is that he's serving. And along with that, it's just interesting because as newscasters report that, just a couple moments later, I mean, literally an hour later or 2 hours later, at the most 2 hours later, they were reporting about a Halloween parade that was taking place again in New York. And and this caught my attention that, you know, that in the midst of all this tragedy, they are also celebrating, observing, celebrating. Remember that? Yeah, they're celebrating Halloween, All Hallows Eve. And at first, it's kind of repulsive. But then when they tell you the reason that, you know, we're not going to let the terrorist terrorists dictate what we're going to be doing with our lives. You understand that it is also a defense mechanism, isn't it? It's a way of standing up to some of this absurd behavior that we can't understand. We talk about terrorism, but I don't think we fully understand what's involved in it. I remember when 9/11 happened, and remembering our President George Bush's words, the war on terror that he talked about. And I remember at that time thinking, well, how could you possibly orchestrate a war against these terrorists? Because anybody could be a terrorist. Anybody could just get up and orchestrate their terror activity, right? And sure enough, here we're seeing it. Guy rents a truck and then he just plows into people, innocent people. And that expression kind of got me to innocent people. Well, who's guilty people? Is it okay if you do it to guilty people? I guess that's kind of a way of rationalizing it. But a few minutes later, they had the Halloween party and, of course, celebration right on the streets of New York. And you understand that, it sounds like in the midst of mourning, they're also celebrating, but it's a defense mechanism. It's a way of coping. It's a coping mechanism with the absurd. And sure enough, it was right in the middle of our World Series, baseball World Series. And so we have this happening. And then just a few minutes later, they're reporting about the World Series and what's going on. And I got to tell you, last night, I watched the last game of the World Series. I've been following I'm not a big baseball fan, but got to admit that the World Series is something that I do watch peripherally. But this year I watched it because it was our home team. It was the Los Angeles Dodgers over here. And I've been watching it. It's been interesting. It's been good. It's slow as ever, as baseball is. But last night, watching the final game, it was exciting. I have to tell you, even though the Dodgers lost, it was a very exciting game watching the aggression of the Astros at the beginning of the game. And then by the end of the game, we are again celebrating and not observing. This time we are celebrating. And this is happening in the midst of our Catholicos being here, in the midst of having the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, of protest. And that's what I want to talk to you about today, about sharing some of these different concepts with you. Because, if you've been following my ministry, 35 years I've been a priest, even longer within the church, 40 years. It's kind of defined by protest, defined by reactionism. When you look at the work that we did, especially during the 80s, the 90s, it's the restless spirit that I always think about. Myself as a young priest, it was this restlessness, unable to deal with the status quo. It was impossible. It was not a good thing. And it still isn't. It still isn't. I don't know. As the years have gone by, we've mellowed out. But the status quo is not a good thing. You got to keep pushing it. And especially when you look at the state of spirituality, when you look at the state of the church, the state of Christianity, when you've got a message of peace, a message of hope, a message of love, and it's basically being rejected, not by an outside influence, but by your own people. By own people, I'm talking about the Christian world. And certainly we're seeing it this week as we commemorate the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. It's an opportunity for you to reflect that how disjointed we really are. How separate, how on different worlds sometimes, different planets we exist, where you've got East and West, where you've got Protestant Catholicism, you've got spirituality, you've got mysticism, and all of this within the structure of Christianity. And a very basic message of peace, a basic message of hope and love, sometimes lost. And so when I look at my life and I look at the reaction, let's be honest, even the next step, what you're listening to, is a reaction to avoid that we felt in our Armenian church, and we said, let's fill it. Let's make this virtual church. I mean, this whole weekend, being with the Catholicos at Catholicos events, I mean, so many people coming up to me. It's humbling, people coming up. We listen to your show. We follow you. We're on Facebook with you. We're listening to the things that you're saying. Thank you for being out there. You know, it's humbling, yes, but on the side, let's put away some of that humility and let's react to it as a service that is being fulfilled. The next step is basically a reaction to no reaction. It's basically a reaction to the emptiness that is out there. It's saying that, yes, people are looking for spirituality. I mean, Next Step started with sermons that were on the net. I mean, you know, there's still a whole catalog of stuff that's out there, whether it's the sermons in video form, in audio form. You know, we have the sermons from Glendale. Those were all way popular before Next Step. They kind of gave us the push that we needed to get to the next step, to talk about what is our next step. What are we doing as a church community, as a Christian community? And it is basically this revolution. It's the uneasiness of sitting around and saying that I'm not content with the status quo. And so reform, reformation, when we talk about all these things, protest, these are things that are part of my vocabulary, have always been a part of my vocabulary. I mean, don't forget, I grew up in the 60s, 70s. Protest was part of it because there was so much corruption. There was distrust for the system. We had a president who was shot, the civil rights leader who was shot. We had a corrupt system. There was something called Vietnam. We had a president that was caught in lying. By all standards of today, when you think about what Richard Nixon did at the time, it's minute compared to what's going on in the world today. When you listen to between Hillary and Trump talking about something that took place last year and the Russians and everything like that, whoa, you know, it's like pretty wild what's going on right now. But in our time, this was the catalyst that pushed us into a protest. And so we had, even our music was protest music, whether it was Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, or even the Beatles toward the end, you know, coming off as the British invasion and playing some very nice tunes of She Loves You and I Want to Hold Your Hand, became, you know, themes of Helter Skelter and You Say You Want a Revolution, where if you're talking about minds that hate, and, you know, there was an evolution within music. And certainly by the 70s, it had arrived into alternative prog rock. You know, there was all the music was reflecting what was going on in time. So sure, yes, I grew up with that protest. And so it was interesting because this last Sunday, as we were celebrating the Divine Liturgy at the Armenian Cathedral here in Burbank, there were protesters outside protesting the appearance of His Holiness Karakhan II. And we get into that free speech business, you know. Here in America, I don't know where you're at in the world, what your laws are, but here in America, you basically have free speech. And you can say just about everything, except anecdotally, they say you can't go into a theater and yell fire. Okay, you have the freedom to yell fire, right? But you can't go into a theater and cause pandemonium and cause people to hurt themselves by yelling fire, by raising false fears. Okay, so there is, and they use this as a way of saying that, yes, we do have free speech, but there is a limit on that free speech. Well, what happened this last Sunday, we had a few, I'm talking about like a handful, 10 people getting up and protest, and they're amplified because the police presence has to be there. And the police, of course, when they come, they run their lights and everything. So the protesters are outside, just very distasteful talk. And I'm not talking as a churchman. I'm talking about just common humanity, common courtesy. And I guess I'm thinking about the Armenian word. We call it Karak Havarutyun. Karak means the city, like coming from civilization. It means civilized, okay? And yeah, you can protest, but it doesn't mean you have to be uncivilized. And in fact, you'll find that your protest gets more meaning and gets more backing when you can find a more common language than this uncivilized restlessness that they were displaying. And I'll tell you what happened. They were just yelling. And here's the fallacy in what they're talking about. They're yelling against His Holiness. As if His Holiness was out, they were going to come to church. They were going to fill up our churches, you know? Somehow, He becomes a scapegoat, right? And we do this throughout. I mean, church leaders are very infamous for this, right? They will identify a scapegoat. It's because youth are lackadaisical. It's because people don't care. It's because you're not presenting the message that people want to hear, right? That people need to hear. Why was Jesus so relevant with a very simple message of love? Why did He get people to follow Him? But we find scapegoats. And sure enough, these people were out there just like finding a scapegoat in His Holiness. And it was just so tasteless. It was just... It really alienated. If I were to go and listen to what they had to say, I would have listened to them. But once they got into that tastelessness, it was just basically that person yelling in the crowded theater. In other words, they were just trying to alarm. I'll tell you, during the Divine Liturgy within the cathedral itself, during the cathedral, there was three separate outbursts, people standing up and yelling. And you know, at that point, I just thought to myself, like, at what point does their freedom of speech infringe on my freedom to worship? This is my space. I have selected to come into this small space to worship as I please with my Catholicos. You do not have the right to come and infringe on my freedom. See? This is what really got me going on this weekend. They could have had maybe more allies. They might have had people listening to them if they just kind of understood the nature of protest and how to do protest. But, you know, it was just, unfortunately, they don't study enough of it, and they just come off by saying, oh, we have freedom to protest. Let's just get up and get a bullhorn. Let's just get up and start yelling nonsensical things. And really, honestly, it was nonsensical. The Saturday before, I was in charge of the youth rally. We had selected 90 young people. And the number of 90 was, of course, to correspond to the 90th anniversary of the Western Diocese, which we were celebrating over here. And so we had 90 young people assembled in a room to ask questions of His Holiness. And I got to tell you something. I was so impressed by the questions that were coming out. First of all, there was none of this question about what's your favorite color and what's your hobbies. But it was more of like, we had one young man talk about His Holiness coming from the Caucasus and talking about the ecosystem and what are we as Armenian Church doing to preserve the ecosystem, to preserve some of the beauty and wonder of the earth and nature. It was like so mature. And so right in place. Another young lady got up and I was just impressed by her boldness. She spoke about the need for young women in the church. And she asked point blank to His Holiness, how can young men be ordained? And how come me as a young lady who I sing in the choir, I am not able to be ordained as an acolyte? What about through marriage? Why are men able to serve the church, continue serving after marriage, and why not women? And so on and so on. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to put a link on today's show notes to the entire youth activity. If you've been following us on Facebook, you know that we've been posting these things. But still, in today's show notes, you'll find them. Do check it out. It's about an hour and 15 minutes, the entire question-answer session. And I was just very impressed by the young people. But we get back to protests. We get back to what was the meaning of all this protest. And, of course, we get to the big protest, which is the Protestant Reformation. And in the second portion of our show, I want to talk a little bit about more than just the church, what that protest meant, how it affected all of us, and different places that it affects us. Because in observing the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation, there has been so much written. And in today's show notes, you'll find some links, which I do encourage you to read and really formulate your own opinions, your own ideas. But His Holiness coming to Los Angeles, meeting with one of the largest communities in the diaspora, was certainly a very holy event for me. And again, I'm just talking for myself. It was very spiritually uplifting, I have to tell you. I was very impressed by what His Holiness had to say to us, a community in diaspora. And I walked away feeling recharged, as I did when coming back from Armenia. And it's important to have those kind of events. It moves it from the observance to the celebration. When you have your church leadership there talking about things that are important. In other words, when there is relevancy, right? Isn't that the key word? When there's relevancy to your faith, then it's important. Then you understand that you can move from observance to celebration. And I have to tell you that this is purely subjective because it depends on where you are. I'm sure people were there and just kind of like backed off and said, this doesn't speak to me. But I'm talking to you as a clergyman, as a priest who has to deal with the day in and day out of a community that is existing in this awkward situation, which we call diaspora, where we don't fit in, where we have this ancient Christianity, but the ways of the world are telling you that, you know, things are moving in a different direction at a different speed. And how do you correlate? How do you bring them together? You can protest, you can bring about reform, or you can do what we do here on the Next Step. In other words, connect the dots. Isn't that a way of forming, of reform? Isn't that connection of the dots that we do between the spiritual, between the psychological, the emotional, the physical, between the old world and the new world, basically taking the ancient tenets of Armenian Orthodoxy and applying it to our lives today? Last night I was hit by a little bit of insomnia. Yeah, we get that too over here. I guess just a little bit too much going on. And I flicked through the channels and I hit upon Melissa Scott. And I didn't think she was still on. Melissa Scott is the wife of Gene Scott, somebody we used to watch here in Los Angeles late night. And it was just very refreshing because I was watching, she was talking about basically what Gene Scott had mentored her, had taught her. And basically this is a faith and a religion that doesn't need to be defined by checking your brain in at the door. No, it's very logical. It makes sense. And so when I think about what we do at the Next Step, what we do as far as revolution, as an option to the status quo, actually a punch to the status quo, I'm very proud. I'm very honored with what we do. And by the likes of the people that came up to me and talked to me over this weekend, by your response through your messages and your support, I know that it's echoing throughout the world. So let's take a break right now and play the song of the day. I'll be back. We're going to be talking a little bit more about reform. We're going to be talking about observing as opposed to celebrating, celebrating as opposed to observing. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with what we have in store for you. Right now, the song of the day I'm going to announce beforehand because I want you to listen to, this is Elizabeth Bayraktarian. She'll be singing a song called Antaram Zarig, Eternal Flower. But I want you to listen to her voice in the midst of the background because that's what we're going to be talking about as well. Here's Elizabeth Bayraktarian, Antaram Zarig. Ooh. Elizabeth Bayraktarian singing Antaram Tzarig, Eternal Flower. Did you hear her melody line? You see, first of all, it starts off with a cello. And the cello is basically playing this harmony. But it can be misconstrued. If you didn't know the melody line, right, you would understand it as a disturbance. Just follow me on this, okay? If you listen to that song, it starts off with a cello. We know the melody and therefore understand it as the harmony, but think of it in the other way. Imagine the cello is playing and is playing that harmony, but you don't know the melody line yet. So it can be misconstrued as a disturbance, as something. And throughout the entire hymn, the entire song, you hear Elizabeth staying faithful to the melody and keeping the melody going and, in fact, harmonizing. So that it's not a question of the cello harmonizing with her voice. She is now harmonizing with the cello. It's the same thing, right? They're harmonizing with one another, obviously. But it's a matter of perspective. What's your perspective? It's all in the way you look at it. And throughout life, we have disturbances. But perhaps they are the harmonies that are in our lives. And it takes us to look around, to be in sync with those harmonies, which we call disturbances, and understand that together we create this beautiful song, which we call life. To me, when we talk about these protests, which we've been talking about today, we're going to be talking in a few moments, some of the difficulties, we talk about revolution, what do you need to effectuate change? It's about us listening to one another, listening for those harmonies that are all around us. Elizabeth Bayraktarian, Antaram Tzarig. If you need to rewind it, listen to it again with what I've explained. It's just truly, truly a beautiful piece in explaining how we need to be harmonizing with one another. The beauty of her voice, the beauty of the melody, overtakes everything else. Hope you enjoyed it.
I take two. Okay.
Okay, how about continuing on the theme of observing versus celebration, the themes of revolution, reformation, considering that it's 500 years right on the eve of All Hallows' Day, of All Saints' Day, namely Halloween. 500 years ago, Martin Luther posted his theses, the 95 theses. And basically, the world changed. It's not just the church, yes. Today, when you look at it, I mean, just last year, was it, that Pope Francis reached out to the Lutheran community, and you're seeing a lot of reconciliation. But in the big picture, how do you reconcile somebody who's protesting against you and telling you that you're evil and you're wrong, and how do you accept it? How do you accept those things? It means your ego has to be put into check, at least has to be put in a back burner, at the very least. Sometimes it has to be thrown out if you're going to be accepting some of the flaws that people are going to be pointing out to you. And certainly that's what happened with the Protestant Reformation, Martin Luther posting his 95 theses, and on All Hallows Eve, on Halloween night, the day before All Saints Day. And, you know, he tried to work within the church. He was a priest of the church. He was a priest of the Roman Catholic Church. And his story is an interesting one, you know, where he dedicates himself to God, having been saved after, I think it was a lightning strike or something like that. And, you know, he gives himself to Christ Church. And in so doing, he comes up with this idea of justification, of being reconciled with God through faith, and, you know, a different way of looking at things. And so we have this big division within the church. Basically, Jesus Christ talking his message. And we have so many different interpretations. We have your Orthodox with their liturgical life. You have the Roman Catholic with the legalism. You have the Protestants who are protesting against everything that's over there, right, by virtue of their name, not by anything else I'm talking about right now. But let's talk a little bit about that, because what happened over the weekend was we saw a protest against His Holiness our Catholicos. And I shared with you some of my personal frustrations with that protest. And it was interesting because right afterwards, we had some people from the local media and they were throwing microphones in our faces. And we had a chance to comment about it and talk a little bit about that as well with local media. But it's also obvious that you need to have an audience to listen to your protest, right? I remember being up in the Bay Area when I served up in the Bay Area. There was a large protest. I think it was, I can't remember what the group was, but they basically blocked the Golden Gate Bridge. And they went on with thousands of people and they just started marching on it. And people were complaining that they did it during rush hour. Well, guess what? If you want to get people's attention, you don't do it 3 a.m, right? You don't do it during the daytime. You do it during rush hour when you block traffic and it causes discomfort to people and people start thinking about, hey, why are these people out there? Unfortunately, you have to be ready because unfortunately it also backfires. People just say, this is disgusting. There is no way in the world that I'm going to be listening to what you have to say because, you know, you're interrupting with my portion of life. Such was the case last week when we had these people getting up, and I think over and over, even afterwards, I saw a small little YouTube clip that they had posted, and people were just outraged. They were incensed. Like, how dare you come into our church and yell like that and scream and dishonor and disrespect? Of course, in their mind, that was the place to do it. Now, let's first of all dissect this a little bit. You know, their protest was against the Catholicos. You know, I've thought about this for years, right? This is nothing new, and I've shared it with you too. What do we expect from these Catholicoses? I was talking with my good friend David. He's on the school board at one of the local colleges, and I was saying, because as a board member, he oversees the president of the university, and I asked him. I said, "What do you expect out of the president?" And yes, he has to be a scholastic person. He has to have at least published some stuff, right? So that he can talk to his faculty with some degree of respect. But here's the bottom line. President, raise funds. And to raise funds, you need to be in with the right people. You need to be in with people that have funds. Well, think about it in those terms too. What do we expect out of our bishops? What do we expect out of the Catholicoi? Right? Basically, they are the ultimate cheerleader, right? They're talking about an institution that has flaws, has difficulties, but they have to lead the cheer. Now, it's interesting because recently we've had Saint John Paul II as Pope. We've had Pope Francis on the Roman Catholic front, people who have been willing to accept some of the flaws, but also maintaining the hard line of the church. And so, too, we sometimes expect that because of the global situation from our clergy. But basically, when you look at a bishop, hey, you know, you, just like a president of a university, look at his first fundamental purpose is to raise funds for that university. And so, too, I mean, we are critical because we see the disconnect with the head of the church, Jesus Christ, who really kind of we understand as somebody who eschewed material wealth or certainly a dependence on that material wealth. And we find a disconnect. I mean, I do too. We all do, right? You look at the church leader, you're looking for a spiritual leader. And certainly by titles that we give him, His Holiness or His Eminence, His Beatitude, these titles that we give, that implies that the person, I mean, even the simplest, the reverend, right? And it implies that this person is at a different level. He is revered. He is a reverend. He has a different standard than the standards of our world. And it bothers us because he comes back and he uses the standards of the world to further his cause, namely the church. And so we have a disconnect over here. And so it's very easy to stand up and protest against this. Somebody threw a microphone in my face the other day and said, well, what do you think about these protesters? And it was interesting because we were just walking by in procession as the protesters were yelling. And as I said, it was just very distasteful. And there's an expression that Armenians have, Shunagahache Karavanagakale. And I can't think of a more appropriate time that I saw that. Basically, people, the dogs are barking, but the caravan continues. And I think there's a bigger truth than just for the incident that happened in Los Angeles last week. I think that's true of most of life. Life is continuing going, and we bark, but that barking has to be heard by somebody. And the louder you can get, the more people you can get on board with you. So unless you can effectuate a large group of people to have a following, you're really going to be stuck against the caravan that keeps marching forward. And this is the case that we're finding, and this is the frustration. I think when you look at why people leave some of these sacred institutions, it's because you see a disconnect from reality, from the things that are important, from the spiritual. And you forget that, yes, if you're going to have that, I mean, if you're going to have that structure, you need that material wealth. Look, here's one of the most basic fundamental wants that everybody wants as a spiritual being. You need the material, right? In our case, in Christians, okay, we need Bibles. Guess what? A Bible is just a bunch of words that are inside of a book, and you can get that Bible relatively easily and freely. You can go and ask. But what do people want, right? They want the red-colored Bible, the leather-bound Bible, right? And those cost money. And so you have no problem saying that, oh, I'm going to a baptism, and even though the kid doesn't read, I'm going to go get a nice Bible that's leather-bound and something that he or she will be able to keep. And that I'm going to put my money aside. But if the church says, hey, we need money for this or that project, we fail to understand that that's just as valid of a concern as our individual concerns for the material that we need. I mean, in any tradition, do you need incense? Do you need do you need spiritual books? Do you need a yoga mat? Whatever it is, there is a certain cost. There is a certain cost to your spirituality. And so we have to accept that there are people within our structure whose purpose it is to raise funds for that. Look what happened over this week, right? We had this horrible incident in New York, which is becoming all too frequent. These mass shootings, these mass killings, and then labeling it as terror. Few minutes later, they are going from the observance of this hideous act to a celebration of Halloween. It's a way of saying that we're going to be trying to figure out how to cope with what's going on over there, right? It's the same thing within the church. We have this absurdity. We have this disconnect with the leader of the church, with Jesus Christ, and we have to figure out how are we going to cope with that. And instead of searching the words of Christ, we are saying, let's go to the status quo. Let's go to business as usual and figure out that, okay, you need this structure, you need this church, and as long as people will frequent these places, don't think it's going to change. I mean, right before our eyes, this week, it happened right in front of us. We went through an extra bit of effort, quite a bit of effort, to showcase the Armenian church and her people, namely the youth, as an Armenian-speaking group of people. And the reality is that that's not the case. Yes, there is a small percentage of people that speak Armenian, but the vast majority communicate in their daily life in English. That is the reality. And we as a church are responsible for their souls, aren't we? Isn't that the first primary purpose of your church? Of course it is. Goes without saying. That is the good news, the kingdom of heaven. It's enacted right now. The good news isn't about speaking a particular language. My God, you want to see language being spoken, open the internet. I mean, you've got parakeets that speak Armenian. Doesn't make them Armenian, doesn't make them Christian. Seriously, there's parakeets that speak Armenian. Okay, what do you want me to do? Is that such a big deal? Well, it is to a lot of people. And we bent over backwards to showcase the Armenian church as an Armenian-speaking church. And we know that thousands, hundreds of thousands of our people are basically unable to speak in Armenian. And so we didn't have the proper translators. In fact, we went overboard at certain events where everything was done in Armenian. And the English-speaking, those who didn't understand a thing, just looked there and they applauded and they clapped and they were nice. They were smiley. And I guarantee you that it doesn't bother them because the church isn't relevant as a faith-based organization. In other words, they are receiving their faith, they are receiving their spirituality elsewhere. And the church is basically this convenient little place where they can go and feel good and Armenian, connect to their roots. And so we have lost on many fronts. And this same group of people, which should be protesting and saying, hey, how about a little bit of English for us? This same group of people will be the ones to continue to write out the checks. And because they write out the checks, the behavior is being supported. It's not only being tolerated, it's being encouraged. Continue it. Here's your check. Just keep it going. Let me have a place that I could connect to. And really, you get what you deserve. You're not going to fight for it. You're not going to create the revolution. You have that power in your hands. You have it certainly in your checkbook. But as long as you're going to be paying for it, you're going to get what you want. And so I'm at a point right now where I don't put up with people who complain about the language. You want something done about the language, you got to stop those checks, right? But it's a convenient scapegoat. The Armenian church doesn't speak English. Sure it does, but we don't support it. We don't support it when it does. Look, here's a real simple thing. There is a church right in Glendale. There is a church that is notoriously a business church. Everybody calls it the business church. And it is many years ago, they were caught for selling arms under. Yeah, I'm serious about this. Yeah, it's noted. But you know what? It is the most popular church in Glendale. People get married there. People have their baptisms there. While knowing the evil, yet we willingly give way to it. And what is the words that we use? Woe to me, woe to me, woe to me, right? Charakit nalov hantels, gamkovs deridavi. I willingly gave away to it. Vayins, vayins, vayins. That's what we say in the confession. We know that there are evil out there, but we are not willing to stand up for it, to stand up against it. Against that evil. And you know what? In a small way, that church people ask me, will I do services there? I just say, I'm sorry, I cannot do it there. And I can't tell you that there's been throngs of people that have left, but I do know that there are a few. And there are a couple people, few, not two, but a few, right? Who I say they're going to get married, and I'll say, I'm sorry, it won't be at that church. They will go to another church just to get me. Okay, that's a small little way that I'm contributing to cleaning up some of the mess. Is it all clean? Well, the dogs are barking. The caravan is going. It's like figuring out how do you stay in the caravan because you don't want to happen what happened to Martin Luther. You don't want to get expelled from the caravan. But you also understand that the barking has some meaning. So you got to figure out how to balance that. To me, this is where next step is. to me, this is the revolution that we've been engaged in. And it's a difficult tightrope that we walk. It's a very, very difficult, because sometimes you try to you inadvertently slip off of that rope and you fall. And the fall is a big one. It's one that I struggle with every day. Honestly, as a priest, it's one that I struggle with, because at the end, you have to give an accounting for what you did. This is the basic belief system that we have. We are accountable for our lives. What did we do with the life? Yes, we did some, we did some bad things. We did some wrong things. But at the end of it, how do you reconcile all of it? And I've shared this many times with our Bible study group, the idea of Dervormel. It's really on the mercy of the Lord, which basically Martin Luther said in the way of faith, right? So you see that slowly we are merging, we're getting to a point. But let's go back to what I was saying about the New York incident. New York happened, they celebrated a few hours later with Halloween. And then we had the World Series. And the World Series was happening with a team, Houston, who had just been devastated. The entire town had been devastated, the entire area had been devastated by a hurricane earlier this year. And so here they are, celebrating the win of their team. And in that case, aren't you happy that they did win? Yes, I'm a Los Angeles Dodgers fan. Okay, but you know, at the end of it, people need opportunities to celebrate. And here was an opportunity that they could celebrate. And what did the sponsors do? This was interesting to me. Throughout the game, throughout the World Series, T-Mobile, one of the cellular providers, kept flashing on the screen that if you hashtag this certain thing, I think it was HR for HR, something like that, if you hashtag that, we will donate $2. And then at the end of the series, they made an announcement that they had donated $2.5 million to hurricane relief. So it's basically reacting to that disaster in a celebratory manner. I'm going to say that again. Reacting to the disaster in a celebratory manner. That's the real challenge. I think that's the challenge that Christians have to face. It's the disaster of Good Friday, of your Lord being up on the cross, devastated, alone, betrayed, humiliated, left for dead, and celebrating. Why? Because you know that that's not the end of the story. And this is what Christians come with. Christians have this, and we need to use it, not knowing that there is more to the story than what you see out there. In this case, we don't protest then. You understand that there is an opportunity for us to have that patience to work within that structure. Now, when they don't give you that opportunity to work through that structure, that's a different case. And then you get things like the next step. You get things like what we've been doing through the Window publication many years ago. You get with things what we do through our church services and our outreach programs. But thank God, up until this point, we've been combating some of these difficulties with the spirit of love and with love in our hearts. And I'm asking you to look at some of these opportunities that we have in our lives. I think I'm going to take a break right now. You know, we get to have lunch today with His Holiness. He's going to be leaving tonight. So just a week he's been here. And we get to have a little bit of lunch and a little bit of off time to share and to talk with him. And it has to be a very special moment for all of us that are attending. And so let me take a break right now. Be back after Susie makes her announcements.
Oye, lo que traigo es la descarga total.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows, which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. It sounded like you were in Cuba or something, weren't you? I don't know what you were doing. Maybe with the theme, right? The archetype of revolution. Okay, I don't know. Anyway, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you for, I got to tell you, thank you for all of your beautiful wishes. And especially this weekend. Wow, did I get my share. I guess just having a concentration of people in one area, it was a very, very beautiful thing to be able to say that we have a church that extends beyond local boundaries and we are all around. And it doesn't have the form of a church, but you never know where this is all going to lead. And that's what the Next Step is about. That's what Armadoxy is about, what the In His Shoes movement is all about. It's getting you involved. Hey, I don't know if you've been following, but on inhisshoes.org, do check out the work that Yvette Hovsepian-Bierce is putting out. You know, she's out in Germany. Our prayers are always with her for the wonderful work she's doing with the refugee community. But there is a new one that she just she wrote a few weeks ago. We did have a little problem getting that up on the getting that up online, but it is up there now. Check it out. She's talking about the commandment, the great commission of our Lord Jesus Christ, and how it affects her work and what she's doing out with the refugees. I really highly recommend that you get out there. We'll have a link on today's show notes to her writings, to her videos. Do check them out. That's just one part of what In His Shoes does. In His Shoes is the author of this Next Step. In His Shoes is the way that we walk in the shoes of others. It's an answer to the evil in the world with doing good. And we invite you to get involved at all levels. And your support is most needed and necessary. Look, I told you earlier, you need that place and you need somebody to cheerlead. Well, I'm giving you some spiritual food and I'm cheerleading at the same time, okay? I hope you're okay with that. And if you're not, hey, you have the choice. You're listening to us, so I appreciate that. I want to thank you for joining us today on our show. We look forward to having you again next week. Do check us out in the meantime at all the usual spaces on Facebook, on inhisshoes.org. We are moving forward and it's just great having you along for the ride. For the wonderful team who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
To ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.